Okay, Boker Tov, everybody. Motim Simcha. Thank you for coming. I hope everybody's having an enjoyable and meaningful, Pesach, and not working too hard. And Erev Yontif, always a good idea to do some learning. Okay. All right. Let's discuss a little bit. Yichol HaMoed and the Torah reading of the last day. I was debating exactly how to name this email. I don't know how many people are from Israel. Probably not too many, but there might be a few. And of course, there's not the last days of Yontif in Israel. There's only the last day of Yontif, of course, which we'll get to in a minute. Of course, we're going to have this strange idea for the next. I didn't check this year when we are going to catch up, but we're going to be reading different parshiot of the week because they're going to read Achrei Mod on Shabbos. So you would think next week we would do Achrei Mod Kedoshim and catch up 1 week, which we do every year when it's a non-leap year. Achrei Mod and Kedoshim are always combined. If you want to know the rules for combining parshiot, at least in Vayikra, not for other parshiot, but there are three possible combinations in Vayikra, Tazria Metzora, Achrei Mod and Kedoshim, and Bahar Bechukotai. So in a non-leap year, all three are combined, and in a leap year, none of them are combined. That's the simple rule in Vayikra. So I would combine them with ketchup next week, but that's not what we do. I don't know if we combine on Chukah Balat, but I didn't check this year. I know a number of years it's going to happen. I assume will be the same this time. We didn't catch up to Matot Masai. And I really, it bothers me in a certain sense. And of course I asked people why that's so. I mean, the simple reason is, it didn't matter. Like until 50 years ago, who cared? How many people traveled between Chutz La'aretz and Israel between Pesach and Shavuos or Pesach and Tisha B'Av? Matan Masa is read just before, Tisha B'Av. Eight people, maybe in a big year, eight people traveled. Today, I remember at the time I checked out 20 million, apparently Ben Gurion Airport takes about 20 million passengers a year. I think that was. So let's say between Pesach and Tisha B'Av, 2 million, 3 million, it's the summer, more people, at least 3 million people are going through the airport. So let's say a quarter of those people go to shul. So that's, 750,000 people. So 750,000 people are going to miss a parsha on their way to Israel and going to hear the same parsha twice when they come back. So I don't know. So now it's a real issue. But as you can imagine, it's not simple to change these things. And if they did, it would cause a big fight, and big fights are never worth it. So we just go by the old way, and whatever, people will hear parsha twice. Okay, but that's not our topic. I want to start with an unbelievable comment of the Netziv. Natali Zihuda Berlin, the great Rosh Hashiva in the Valeshin Shiva. It's like you wouldn't believe it if you didn't see it. So I'm going to have to show it to you because I didn't believe it. So the Netziv claims that in a Shemitah year, which we're in now, the original plan of the Torah was to have no holidays of Shavuot and Sukkot in a Shemitah year. There's no need for that. And that only changed with the Cheta Egel. Why is that so? See, I don't know if anybody wondered if you went to shul on Chol HaMoed. So yesterday and 2 days ago, 2 days ago we read Mishpatim, yesterday Kitisa, I think, right? And both of them, apparently, well, the reason we read it is kind of interesting. We read in Kesef Tava, if you lend money, don't charge interest. We spoke a couple of weeks ago how the purpose of leaving Egypt was our ethical, financial responsibilities. So the whole laning there deals with not oppressing a stranger, but being, not charging interest and other, monetary transactions. And the Shalosh Regalim. And then yesterday in Kitisa, it says almost verbatim, almost word for word. It's like 10 chapters later in the Torah. It repeats the same thing after the Chedeg with the Shalosh Regalim. And of course, the question is why? Why does the Torah have to do that? That repeated again. So basically what the Netziv says, that's to tell us that after Cheta Egel, the Shalosh Regalim reappear. In other words, we weren't going to have them, at least Shavuos and Sukkot. He doesn't say that on Pesach, because Pesach is very different. It's forming of national identity. And the Pesach does not in the Torah have much of an agricultural motif. The Torah doesn't refer to it as Chag HaKatzir, Chag HaSiv. It's not really, the agriculture hasn't really started. There's a little bit, the Korban HaOmer is an agricultural idea, but the festival is not an agricultural festival in the same way that Shavuot and Sukkot are. Shavuot is only an agricultural festival in Torah. We'll have to talk about that, please God, in 6 weeks or 7 weeks. That Shavuot, there's no mention of the Torah at all. There's no historical references at all in the Torah to Shavuot. Sukkot is mentioned 7 times in the Torah, more than any other holiday. Sukkot is mentioned 7 times, and only one of them is the idea of a sukkah mentioned. 6 of the 7 references are only agricultural, and one is what you would call historical. Kibbutz Sukkot Hoshavti Ben Israel. God redeemed us when we left Egypt. We dwelled in Sukkot. But the other 6 are all only agricultural. Shavuot is only agricultural. Pesach is very historical. You look in the Torah, you know, we read about it for, you know, Shmot Vei, Rabo, B'Shalach, you know, it's all over. And it's so then it seemed plain, new agriculture. So therefore, you don't have to have the holiday of Shavuot and Sukkot. So let me just show it to you inside, because I wouldn't believe, like, if you were to tell me this, I wouldn't believe you. Like, I don't believe. Let's go here. So here we go. So if you can see, or this is the foot the rabbi coming to, which sounds like it's talking on Shabbat, and it for sure is on the Pshat level. Bechatzir, Becharishu, Bechatzir. So these are two, and besides lighting a fire, the only other two Melachot that I mentioned in conjunction with Shabbat. Sounds like it's on Shabbat. The Talmud has another level of interpretation and interprets that Pasuk is actually talking about Shemitah, which would fit in even extra better to what the Netziv says. And then the Torah says, see, it's interesting. You'll notice how Chag HaPesach is up here. You see how the Torah is put together so meticulously careful in how they read it. Chag HaMatzot is up here. Okay, first of all, I'll talk about Avodah Zarah. We talked about that 2 weeks ago. The Chametz is like Avodah Zarah. Elohei Maseicha lo tasalach. That's, remember, this is the aftermath of Chet HaEgel. What we read yesterday was the aftermath of the Chet HaEgel, the Yud Gimel Midot. Don't, and then we end, don't have any false gods. Don't make molten gods or whatever, you know, make any idols. And then keep matzahs, keep chag hamatzot, right? And then it talks about petarechem, the firstborn, which of course is a major theme of Pesach, here by the animal, right? Petrachamor, Tifteva said, the first of the animals are also holy day, holy. Then 6 days and 7 day on Shabbat or Shemitah, whatever it is. And then the Torah goes back to Shavuot and Sukkot in one verse. Chag HaShavuot HaSalach B'Korei K'sir K'sitim, at the beginning of the harvest time. And Chag HaSif, the gathering time, Kufat HaShana, the end of the year on Sukkot. By the way, it's interesting, the notion that Sukkot is Tekufat HaShana, the end of the year. We think of Rosh Hashanah as the end of the year. So it's like, I always like to compare this. This is like, you ever watching the a relay race, the 4x100 relay race. So when they hand the baton for 10 meters, there's like the first guy and the second guy are both running at the same time. Like, you know, as they hand it off, he starts. So it's still like, it's the end of the first guy. It's the beginning of the second guy. So we have like a 3 week period where the year doesn't end on a specific date. The year ends over a 3 week period. That's why Rosh Hashanah is like the new year, but Yom Kippur is last year. You know, like we go backwards. Rosh Hashanah, we're focusing, this should be a wonderful year, a good year. And Yom Kippur, what did we do wrong last year? Shouldn't it be the opposite? Like first it's wrong, you move forward. It's back and forth. And then back on Sukkot, it's like a little bit, it's combined. It's, but the Torah calls it the end of the year is really on Sukkot, not necessarily Rosh Hashanah, just like our day doesn't end in a particular moment. Bein Hashmashot, the twilight period is, as Rav Soloveitchik always used to explain, it's not that we're in doubt if it's day or night. Like we have Shabbos for 25 hours because we have to start before twilight and end after twilight. You know, we have, so we're not sure. Rav Soloveitchik, it's not that we're not sure. It's day and night. The period of twilight, there's no sun. So it's night, but it's still light. So it's day. So it, the day and the night combine into one, even though they sort of contradict. So the same thing for 3 weeks, from Rosh Hashanah to Sukkot, we're sort of in between 2 years. Anyway, that's just an aside. And then the Torah says 3 times go up a year. So here, let's take a look at the Netziv. Of course, I guess it's here. So let's go to the Emek Devar. What happened here? Oh, yeah, because I moved. Okay, so the Emek Devar, that's a commentary of the Netziv. The Netziv, of course, Rosh Yeshiva Valashin from about 1845 till the yeshiva closed in 1892. called by the Russian government, that evil government. Okay, Chag HaSif Tkufat HaShana. Be'emet, okay, explains why didn't the Torah say call it Chag HaSukkot, Chag HaSif. Okay, anyways, let's do the part. The Kozegi Achar HaEgel. This is only after the sin of the golden calf, which is what the laning is. The whole laning is about the sin of the golden calf. The Kodah Maseegel Lo Baush Tevergalim Elabishvil Shema Beteva HaMedina Lachog Beit Katsir HaSif. This was a national holiday that all countries celebrate. Hema Beteva HaMedina. Nations celebrate Thanksgiving. Why is Thanksgiving? It's a harvest time. Nations celebrate Be'et Katsir at the beginning of the harvest, Uve'asif, and the ingathering of the harvest. That would have been, that's what Shavuot and Sukkot are ba. V'lo v'akatuv lazir lehem ela shiyu chag l'shem. And the Torah just says, don't think it's kochi votsem yadi. Don't think it's my strength. Recognize that God is the master of agriculture. So when we celebrate the harvest, we should celebrate, we should acknowledge that without God bringing the rain, there wouldn't be any harvest, right? That the farmer is the most likely to recognize the importance of faith, because he knows no matter how hard he works, if the weather, i.e. God doesn't cooperate, he's finished. On the other hand, the farmer is the least likely to have faith, because it depends on the year. Because if there's a lot of rain, oh, look at, I worked really hard. He just assumes the rain is natural. It's all his work. So the Torah is always connecting farming to faith. The farmer should recognize it comes from God. Aval hold on. Aval im lo haya chag ratzon adam. It's actually the next one. Hold on. Yeah. In im din lasa klal chag l'shem mitzvah. But ein came b'shvit ein bo chagim elu. He says like this. He thinks he's not 100% sure, but im din lasa klal chag l'shem mitzvah. The im came. In the Shemitah year, in the Shemitah year, we're not going to have these holidays because there's no katsir and no asif. The farmer doesn't have to recognize country God. He's not doesn't gather. It's the fields are ownerless. Aval achar ha'egel, after the sin of the golden calf, it changed. The Torah commands that we follow these holidays, even in the Shemitah year, in order that we should gain our faith. So this is an unbelievable comment of the Netziv, that he suggests pretty strongly that in a Shemitah year originally there would not be a need for Shavuot and Sukkot. For sure Shavuot, we understand Sukkot too. Why do we have to sit in the Sukkot at that time of the year? It doesn't really matter. Sit in the Sukkot any time of the year. That's the tourist question. Why Sukkot in the fall? Sukkot, as we sat there 40 years every day of the year. So it really doesn't matter. So I just find that comment an astounding comment. Now, by the way, if you've studied the Netziv at all, so then it's like all great people. He's a super, super original thinker and very creative. And it just reminds you of a comment Rav Schechter once made in Shir. But first, I don't know if you know the history in the Volozhin Yeshiva, just an aside. If you read Shaul Stamper's wonderful book on the Lithuanian Yeshiva, Shaul Stamper's, he's from America, but he's a historian at Hebrew University. He writes about Eastern European life. So he has fantastic articles. So he has one book on the Lithuanian Yeshivas, most of the books about Volozhin, but he also talks about, he also talks on Slobodka. I forget now the other yeshivas he talks about a little. But, there was major, like in all places, everywhere, there was controversy who's going to lead the yeshiva. And the students didn't really like the Netziv as much. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was there, first his father, the Beis Halevi. And they were original thinkers, Rav Chaim, there's new analysis, this new methodology of learning, analysis. And also, it was a lot easier. The old way of the Netziv, you had to know all of Shas, you had to know everything, and then you figure out what's going on. In the Rav Chaim methodology, that's one of the reasons it became so popular. You don't have to know so much. In other words, I'm not saying you don't have to know much. I'm not saying Rav Chaim said you don't have to know much. But in order to produce the method, it's all about thinking, analyzing. It's not about factual. It's not about comparing two Gemaras. It's trying to understand on its own. So you don't need that broad-based knowledge. But anyways, the Netziv was sort of, I don't want to say boring, but it wasn't exciting. He was like very, played. And yet, when it comes to psak and everything and creativity, the Netziv was much more creative. Rav Chaim was small C conservative. The Brisker is super conservative. And even though, in other words, even though in his learning approach, Rav Chaim, new modern scientific approach, classification, The Netziv was really much more creative. Not to mind you, Rav Schechter once told this. I thought it was a very insightful comment. It's really true. If you compare Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Moshe Feinstein, so of course Rav Soloveitchik was modern, got a PhD in philosophy. He created modern orthodoxy. I tell my kids in chat, they're only sitting in the classroom in chat because of Rav Soloveitchik. Until Rav Soloveitchik came to America, you could not be from and Americanized at the same time. You had to choose. Either you're going to be observant, in which case you had to be totally divorced from American life, or you assimilated and then you lost your Judaism. Soloveitchik was the first person to come to America. Let's say you can, quote unquote, have your cake and eat it too, like Shimshon Paul Hirsch did in Germany. People don't recognize, I think that was the greatest contribution to the Rebbe. All the learning was wonderful, but it all pales in comparison to being a model. You can see, and all three of his kids, by the way, are Harvard graduates. And Maimonides, founder Maimonides, he had six kids when he found, who wants to go to Maimonides? Crazy, we don't go to day school in America. It's nuts, you don't do that. I'm talking about Orthodox people would say that. So Rav Soloveitchik was the first person to say that's his greatest contribution. He was modern, and the way he dressed, and the way he spoke, and the way what he read, his interest. And Rav Moshe Feinstein, I spoke a broken English. So no, I don't know if you ever met him. I never actually met Rav Moshe. The Rav, of course, I met, thank God. But Rav's Yortzeit was just two days ago. It was 29th Yortzeit. So Rav Moshe was a short man, yeshiva. He didn't, he wasn't what you would call, he allowed an Israeli flag in to stay in a shul, even though there are Rishayim, the Zionists are evil people. But Machloket is worse. It's a fascinating tshuva. That's Rav Moshe. He wasn't from the modern Orthodox world. He had tremendous insight. He was a great, and he wasn't like an extremist, God forbid, but he was not what you would at all classify as modern Orthodox, and that's totally fine. But when it came to halacha, Rav Soloveitchik was 1,000 times more small C conservative. Rav Moshe was a radical tshuva, wild. Civil marriage doesn't count. Freeing magunot left and right. Rav Moshe was like a radical posek in so many ways. And Rav Soloveitchik was a really small C conservative posek. So it's very interesting. The personality of the person doesn't always sort of go with how their halachic approach is. So you have that same thing by Netziv. I just found that comment so astounding that, and of course it means within the Torah itself, the nature of the holidays changed. In other words, we know the new modern, the way we study Tanakh, we know that one book of the Chumash often comments on the other, like Megillat Esther is playing off the Yosef story, like all kinds of books playing off of one each other. But you have that in the Chumash itself, Sefer Dvarim playing off earlier books, etc. Okay, so that's the first comment. Okay, let's and that's why the Torah writes the holidays right after Chet Egel again. That's why I have almost the exact same thing, 10 chapters apart, and we read it on back-to-back days on Chol HaMoed. Okay, now it's very, I'll just point out one other kind of fascinating thing. The laning, I was walking home from shul with my son-in-law and daughter this morning, so he just commented that that the laning on Pesach, Chol HaMoed, is much more interesting than laning on Sukkot. Sukkot is the same, but Yom HaShani, we read the Korban every day, the same Korban, just over and over, where they bring 13 parim or 12 parim or 11 parim, but it's 13, and but it's always Shnei Elim and 14 Fasim and Asir Lechatat. That's it. That's the whole laning. Four times over and over and over, the same thing. Here, the laning is very interesting. Very every day. Today, we read about Pesach Sheni, read about the Chet Egel, read about all kinds of mitzvot, Terechem and Tfilin, all kinds of fascinating things we read on Sukkot. But if you look in the Mishnah, I just want to show you, I don't know, I maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I don't think I am. So let's go to the Mishnah here, Mishnah Megillah. So the Mishnah tells us what we read. And this is the Mishnah in Megillah, right? Masechet Megillah, that's ostensibly about Purim, but most of it is not about Purim. It's about all the Torah readings. B'Pesach Korim B'Parshat Mo'adot, that's Emor, Kaf Gimel, Shorach Esav Oeis Ki Valei, which we did not do exactly. We only did that on the second day. Remember, according to the Mishnah, there's only one day. The Mishnah is written in Israel. So there's only one day of Yom Tov. Shel Torah Kohanim V'Yikra Kaf Beit, that's we do about Seret, that's Shavuot. Rosh Hashanah, B'chodesh HaShvi, which we do not do. That you read about the seventh month, like what we would do on Sukkot. We only do that in the Maftir, but we read about Avram. That's not in the Mishnah. God changed. We do. Biyantav Rishon Shacha Korim Beparshat Moadot. That's what we do. Kaf Gimel Vayikra Shavat Torah Kohanim. Like on the second day of Pesach. The first day on Sukkot, if you remember, we do the same laning 2 days in a row. The same two laning Kaf Gimel Vayikra. The first day is Biyantav. Then the same laning Korbanos on Chol HaMoed Pesach. We switch it. The first day we read from Shor Oches. We read. We read about the Exodus on the first day. It makes sort of more sense in a sense. And then we read about Shamoadot. And on the days of the rest of the days of Sukkot, you read about the Korbanot, which is what we do. But you'll notice what's missing is any laning for Chol HaMoed Pesach. The Mishnah does not list laning for Chol HaMoed Pesach. So I would like to suggest, you need maybe scholars who know more than I, but it would seem to be that the Pesach laning was added later. You'll see in the Gemara, I can show you very briefly, half of this Mishnah already changed. In other words, there was a lot of fluidity in terms of the laning. So it could be originally, there was no laning on Chol HaMoed Pesach, because we know Chol HaMoed Pesach is less than Chol HaMoed Sukkot. We don't. We only say half Hallel. It's not the same idea of a yontif as Chol HaMoed Sukkot. Chol HaMoed Sukkot is greater. And the lulav and etzer was taken all 7 days in the temple, and now we take it everywhere. So there is a little bit of a difference between Chol HaMoed Sukkot and Pesach, and it could be the Torah reading on Chol HaMoed Pesach was later, in which case they sort of chose. If you look here in the Gemara on this, so the Gemara here, this is the real, I did the real Gemara, the real McCoy, as opposed to a Safari Gemara. So here's the Mishnah. Okay, but Mishnah, look in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan v'Pesach Moadot. Okay, then what the map there? And then it says, Idna Dika Treyuma. Now that we have 2 days, right? I can't highlight it. Now that we have 2 days, they don't, by the way, it never says in the Torah reading what we do. It just says what the Torah is. And then the Gemara says, you gather, you read whatever, you gather stuff, minyano shel Pesach. Different thing. Mayinim mapu. Mapu. Siman, what does that mean? Yantavach, or whatever. Fine. So it's interesting how the Torah, how the Mishnah sort of goes through, and Tosfot's a little bit bothered. Why did we change it? When we changed after laning on Simchas Torah, well, there was a lot of changes that took place in the laning. Laning is, that was a rabbinic takana, began by Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who instituted Torah reading on Shabbat, and as a rabbi, not as God's prophet. Moshe was both the greatest prophet, and he gave us the Torah, but Moshe was a rabbi. Every rabbi in every generation, the leading rabbis, can institute rabbinic takana. We never think of Moshe like that. But if you look in, I forget the name of the book. There's a fantastic book that nobody reads. I don't know. It's never became popular. It's a history of the takanot, written by, I forget his name. I have it at home, 4 volumes. He goes through the history of takanot, and he starts from Moshe Rabbeinu, the takanot of Moshe and Yoshua and Sheikh Nezigdola, for every generation, what the rabbis added. I don't know why the book never became popular. As far as I know, I don't know anybody who's read it. It's so unpopular, I can't even remember what it's called, even though I have it at home and it sits on my shelf. I'm not at home, though. I can't pull it up. But so Moshe Rabbeinu made takanot to read Torah. Then Ezra did the way we do it. He formulated the Monday and Thursday, when we do the laning. But anyways, it's just interesting. Okay, let's spend a few moments talking about the laning for the last days, and I'll assume most people are in good starts, and even if you're not, hopefully you'll have...
By the way, Rabbi, there's one other difference between Chol HaMoed Pesach and Chol HaMoed Sukkot, and that's evident in the brachot of the Haftorah.
Yes, that's correct.
Pesach, we just, this year it doesn't, because there's no Shabbat
right.
Chol HaMoed.
Correct.
Pesach, we just say Mekadesh HaShabbat.
Correct.
And Sukkot, right. We say Mekadesh HaShabbat v'Yisrael v'Hazmanim.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for that. That is correct. Because I think there's a whole discussion on that exactly. And I think there are different opinions on Pesach too, but that is our practice, that we do distinguish that way. And you're right, because Sukkot is more, it's Sukkot that's Man Simchatenu. Sukkot is the culmination of all days. We mentioned that a few weeks ago. Listen, that's why the Korbanot are doubled. on Sukkot. That's why it's Shnei.
And therefore, each day is considered a Chag by itself.
Yeah, correct. We spoke about that in our Siddur class. We were talking about why we say Phil Hallel. I'll touch on one point of that later on. A few weeks ago, the Gemara says we say Hallel every day because the Korbanot are different. Where on Pesach, the Korbanot are the same. But the Korbanot are always two parim, two or one par. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot, it's one par. Rosh Chodesh, Pesach, and Shavuot is two parim. Forget Sukkot is their own calculation with the 70 parim. But it's always one ayal, one ram, and shivak kasim, and seven sheep. Always on all of those holidays, Rosh Chodesh, Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Shemini Atzeret, always one Ayil and Shavuot Tzim, and a Seir L'Chatat, to remind us of Yosef, a goat as a sin offering. But on Sukkot, it's except for Sukkot, and Sukkot is Shnei, even 14 Tzim, we double, because Sukkot is a double holiday. And as we mentioned before, Menachem Liebtag, this is where I first heard it from, Sukkot is both the culmination of Shalosh Regalim, Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. So it's, you know, and it's the culmination of the high holiday season, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot. And when, you know, we always use Sukkot in those two ways. Now we think about Sukkot as the third of the Shalosh Regalim. But, you know, when we come to Sukkot, real Sukkot, why is it after Yom Kippur? And what's the connection between Tshuva and Simcha and Yom Kippur? Well, it's not by fluke that Sukkot is 5 days after Yom Kippur. So Sukkot is a double holiday. So there's extra Simcha. So it's going to be more. So Chol HaMoed Sukkot is going to be more. I remember Rav Schachter told us that halakhically, that if I remember correctly, he said, you know, part of the mitzvah of Simcha is to drink wine, eat meat, maybe drink wine, eat meat. That's the way it used to be. So he thought that the question is, do you have to have wine every day on Chol HaMoed? So he thought there might be a distinction between Sukkot and Pesach. That on Chol HaMoed Sukkot, there's a real din of Simcha, a greater din of Simcha, and therefore you would supposed to drink wine, and on Pesach it's less of a din of simcha, whatever it is. But they are a little different. They're like the Shalosh Regalim go together. You know the cute comment of the Torah Tmima, you know, Mekadesh Yisrael Vazmanim. So why on Rosh Hashanah we say Melech HaKol Aretz Mekadesh, you know, Mekadesh Yisrael B'Yom HaZikaron, and on Yom Kippur we say Mochel V'Solech Lavanoteinu Lavanot Amo B'Yisrael Vashmoteinu B'Chol Shana B'Shana. Right, Melech Mochel V'Solech. In other words, the brach of Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, is specific to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So why on Pesach don't we say Mekadesh Yisroel, V'chag HaMatzot, V'chag HaShavuot, V'chag HaSukkot? Why do we say Hasmanim? So the Torah Tmima, that's Rav Baruch HaLevi Epstein, died in the 1940s, the son of the Aruch Shulchan, a fascinating figure in his own right, and the nephew of the Netziv. He wrote the book, the art scroll book that they had to recall, My Uncle the Netziv. But based on his four-volume memoir, 2,000 pages he wrote during World War I, when he didn't have books, it was too hard to learn. So he wrote a four-volume memoir about the history of the family. He claims the family is a Sephardic, even though their name is Epstein. He claims their name, they're originally a Sephardic family. They were exiled from Spain. They ended up, I think, in Amsterdam, or whatever, they changed their name. They became Ashkenized. But fascinating. He was a fascinating character in many, many, many ways. So he a great, great Torah scholar. And Torah to me is a very, very popular book. So he has a comment that's a printer's mistake. We have our own machzor for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, but we use the same machzor, we use the same siddur, the same Birnbaum or art scroll or Koran siddur. I mean, now they to make more money, they publish in their own. But when I grew up, people had the same siddur. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva. You're not allowed to print the Shabbos and the Yontif siddur in one book. You have to have a siddur of 1,300 pages. Because what happens is 50 of those pages get used 7 days a week. And the 1,200 of them get used once a year, once a week, most, right? So what happens is the siddur has to get thrown out in a year because of the 100 pages per shachrit you use every day, and the 1,200 pages go into Shemus unnecessarily. So Rav Moshe Feinstein said the old method when I grew up, there was a Shabbos siddur and a weekday siddur. Today, that's too inconvenient. So nobody follows. When they don't like Rav Moshe, they don't follow him. So, but that's a tshuva of Rav Moshe, that you'd have your separate siddur. So that new, that's what Art School and Koran both did that now. Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, their own, but they're 1,500 pages each. I don't exactly know how they did that, but they managed to do that. Okay, Beseder. So he says that there was a printer's mistake. They used the same printer. So he put in, it was same sitter, so he put in hasmanim, but obviously it was a generic term, and you were supposed to change it to chag hamatzot. Hasmanim was just a footholder, whatever we called it, a placeholder, and on each holiday you should put in, it's a very fascinating suggestion, makes a lot of sense. So Rav Soloveitchik gave a two-hour shiur to explain why he was wrong. And Rav Soloveitchik said, because the Kedusha, if I remember, I don't remember the whole shiur now, but the Kedusha of the Shalosh Regalim, it's one. The Shalosh Regalim are one unit. The Kedusha of Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, as it's, in the Rishon, it's a separate level of Kedusha. But the Shalosh Regalim are like one idea. And the Torah says it all the time. Yes, there are minor differences, of course, as we're discussing. But fundamentally, it's one Kedusha Hayom. And therefore, we say the same Siyum HaBracha. It's not a printer's mistake. That's, that, but, anyways, okay. So let's discuss, the laning for, tomorrow, which around the world, Kriyat Yam Suf. So why do we read Kriyat Yam Suf tomorrow? What's the simple reason? Somebody who's still with me? Why do we
read? Because that's when they cross the sea.
Yeah, that's when they cross the sea. How do you know that? You know, that was a setup, of course. That, you know, how do you know that? I don't know how I know that, because I don't know how we know. It's a medrash, of course. It's nowhere. Maybe you can figure it out. 3 days he left. I don't need to, you know, it's so much. Always, you know, the Torah never tells us. Furthermore, the Torah never, of course, that's the standard idea. We cross the Yam Suf. The Torah never tells us. But A, the Torah never tells us. B, the Torah never says to celebrate it. Like, it's not, the Torah doesn't make an occasion of celebrating Kriyat Yam Suf. We celebrate Yitzim probably because it's part of Yitzim Mitzrayim. It's part of the whole process of Yitzim Mitzrayim. But the Torah talks about it. Of course, it's very important, just like the Torah talks on Matan Torah. But again, the Torah never tells us the date of Matan Torah. And there's a debate in the Talmud. And as I mentioned earlier at the beginning of this year, Shavuos in the Torah is totally agricultural. So these two events, the Kriyat Yam Suf and the giving of the Torah are, of course, important events, but they're not important events as to celebrate or to acknowledge at a particular point in history. Maybe that means they're more important. I don't know. In other words, Yetzir Mitzrayim, we have to remember every day. That's really, really important, right? But we don't have to refrain from eating in chametz every day. We don't have to blow shofar every day. We don't have to fast every day, obviously, right? We celebrate things once a year, because once a year we need a shon in the arm. It's not needed every single day. The mitzvot that are needed every day, Shema. You have to do Shema not only every day, twice a day. We discussed last week, Shema is the only mitzvah that's time-bound, that is in the day and in the night. It's very, very important. We've incorporated Az Yashir into our tefillot. Obviously, that's a minhag, and that's a later thing, but obviously it's very important, but it's not tied into a particular date, just like Matan Torah is not tied into a date. We today have tied it into the seventh day of Pesach Seder. Okay, good. I just want to, but I want to mention a fascinating argument. Okay, so I'm sure most people, it's always, you know, dangerous, but, you know, I hope you'll forgive my, you know, my style. Okay, who went into the sea first, right? Everybody knows, everybody was taught in kindergarten. If you went to a Jewish school, I know not everybody did, but how did they cross the Yam Suf? Who wants to speak up?
Binyamin.
Ooh, that was great. Wow. That's not, you weren't supposed to say that. Okay. What were you supposed to say?
Nachshon
ben Amin Nadav, right? So that's actually, what I was taught in kindergarten, I don't know when I discovered that it's actually a debate in the Talmud, whether it was Nachshon ben Amin Nadav or it was the tribe of Binyamin. So I'll show that more. And then I want to show you an unbelievable shot that Rabbi Dr. Aaron Levine, my great professor, Alav Shalom, really wonderful person. I mentioned him a number of times, really the founder of the field of Jewish economics, of economics and halakha, really a tremendous, tremendous person who passed away a number of years ago. But I'll tell you his pshat, he told us. So let's share our screen and let's just show you the machloket in the Gemara. It's a Gemara in Sota, of all places. There are a lot of, it's went to the wrong place. That's my notes here. What's going on here? Let me do this. I didn't do this correctly. Share my screen here. See my notes. That's fine. Okay. Is this working? see. Okay. Let me Sota. Where do you have Sota? Here we go. Okay. So the Gemara in Sota, where you have a lot of discussion about Egypt, by the way, that's where Miriam talks to her father. We don't have time what it's doing in Sota. So it says like this: Hayav Rabbi Meir Omer. Rabbi Meir said, Keshamdu Yisrael al Hayam, Hayushvati Menaschim Zadza. The tribes were Linatseap, you know, to win or to make eternal. We're fighting with one another. Zelmer and Yaretchilali. Zelmer and Reitchilaliyam. Everybody was fighting. I'm going to go in first. We have such faith in God. I'm going to be the first one to jump into the sea. It's interesting. It's like it's not the impression you get when you read in the Chumash, because the Jewish people are complaining. We got a sea in front of us, and we got the Egyptians behind us. But that's how the Gemara is presenting it. They were fighting. Everybody wanted the merit to jump in first. So what happened? Kafats. They didn't wait while the argument was going on. They jumped in. They didn't ask for permission. The tribe of Binyamin went in. The Gemara quotes a pasuk and wow. The tribe Yehuda was the leading tribe, right? They led the march. They were the largest tribe, 74,000 people and 74,000 men between 20 and 60. And they were the, you know, the Yehuda became Malchut, and you know, the leadership got shifted pretty quickly to Yehuda. So they were stoning them. Wow, they were like not so happy. The Bat, the Gemara defends Binyamin. B'pichach zacha Binyamin, Benjamin merited, Hatzadik, Binyamin Hatzadik, Menaseh Ushpi Chayin Ligvura. By the way, it's interesting. We know of Yosef Hatzadik, but here the Gemara calls Binyamin Hatzadik. Menaseh Ushpizin Ligvura. He became the guest, the Ushpizin, like on Sukkot. Shenamar Bengtev Eshachin. And we know that the Beit HaMikdash was half in Shevet Yehuda and half in Shevet Binyamin. So Binyamin, because they jumped into the sea first, merited. Amar lo Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with me. Lo kach chayam aseh. You got it all wrong. That's not what happened. Elazomer ein ani yoreit chila. It's like, I love these arguments where they're like totally 180 degrees. You know, you have an argument that this, do we stop eating chametz at 10 o'clock in the morning, 11 o'clock in the morning, right? 2 hours before, okay, fine. This like argument like night and day. One says everybody's arguing to go in first, and it says everybody's arguing not to go in first. Elazomer ein ani, you go in, you can go, I'll follow you. I have respect for you, respect my elders. You can go into the sea first. Ein ani yoreit chila. Kafatz, again, jumped Nachshon ben Aminadab. Nachshon ben Aminadab jumped in, and what's the reward he got? I don't even remember if the Gemara says. The Fichach Zacha Yudal Asot Memshala Yisrael. That's why they became the king. That's interesting. Because there are other reasons why they became the king with Yosef, whatever it is. So you have this interesting debate, like to the end, like 180 degrees. So Aaron Levine, I remember at my first year in YU, I took him as a professor of comparative economics, and he was really he was also a tzaddik, a tremendous Talmud Chacham, written many, many, four big books and five books, really, and hundreds of articles on Jewish law and economics. And so he quoted the Lev Aryeh. He wrote a commentary on Chulin. I remember he quoted him. Aryeh Grossness, I think, is the name. And he said, there's no debate here. I don't know if this is the pshat. I don't know if it fits in 100%, but it's a beautiful idea. He said, there's no argument. Keshamdu Yisrael Alandu. When the Jewish people were 10 miles away, everyone was saying, I'm going to go first. I'm going to go first. Everybody's going to go first. But when they got to the sea, it was very different. It was nobody wanted to go on first. And he discussed this idea in terms of economics and halakha. He says, basically, people are big talkers in advance. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. But then when they got, of course, everybody had faith in God. But when they actually got to the sea and you actually had to jump in, all of a sudden they got cold feet. I think it's a beautiful idea. And I think it's very true psychologically. We always say we're going to do great things until we're actually put to the test. He used that halakhically in terms of self-assessment and economic halakha, in terms of advertising. What are the things you can say? Like people say, I will do this, I won't do this. So very often those things are, unless you can verify them, are misleading, because people say all kinds of things they would do, they will do, they would have done, but they don't actually do when there's a time of crisis. So I just thought that was a very interesting perspective on that debate, whether it was Nachshon or Binyamin. Generally, a debate like that, you cannot say Elu ve'elu divrohim chayim. They can't both be right. Either, in other words, we say Elu ve'elu, Beit Hillel or Beit Shammai, say a Bori Pri Agafen first or Mekadesh Yisrael Bazmanim first in the Kiddush. Okay, they can be right. They can both have reason. But when it isn't actual, what happened factually, they can't both be right. Either one jumped in. But the way he explains it, the idea is a very beautiful idea. Beforehand, it doesn't fit 100% that Binyamin jumped in. But the concept, I remember anyways, I thought that was a very interesting idea. It kind of reminds me of the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. What's mine is mine. What's mine and yours is yours. Right? A person, arba midot batam. What's mine is mine and yours is yours. Is that good or bad? Everybody's afraid to answer. I got them nervous. Okay. Tov, I'll pick on you. Good or bad?
Bad.
In between.
There you go. Perfect. Zumi da benonit. The Mishnah said, that's a, it's not good. It's not good. It's not bad. I don't bother you. Don't leave me. Zumi da benonit. Beyeshamrim. And some say zumi da stum. Storm is where Pesach began, as we spoke 2 weeks ago, right? The first event, Matzah, right? Lot Matzah, we spoke about that whole thing. Zumi dat Storm. This is the trait of Storm, to not care about other people. What's mine is yours. So this, again, unbelievable argument. One guy says it's fine. It's not great, but, it's fine. And one guy says this is like the epitome of evil. So, wow, that's like unbelievable. So I remember, I believe it was Rabbi Meir Berglass, who told me this when I was in high school. Rabbi Berglass was taught me Mishnah for 4 years. In the olden days, we used to learn Gemara and Mishnah. We did, we had 4 periods a week of Mishnah in addition to 2.5 hours a day of Gemara. That's what we learned in our Chaim. But anyways, so he was my missionary for all 4 years. I was the rabbi in Charlottesville congregation in Toronto. And then he made Aliyah. He founded Midrashat Moriah in Israel, if those who know. Anyways, I hope he's well. I don't know, anybody know how he's doing? He wasn't well a few years ago, but I think he is better. He's God. Anyway, so he told us that there's no debate. Ha'omer is in the singular. One who says what's mine is mine and yours is yours. It's okay. A society can exist. No, they're always going to have people who mind their own business. They don't bother you. We don't bother you. Yeshomrim, once it becomes a societal, and many people say that society cannot function like that. A society needs to be like, it's a beautiful idea. Yeshami, it's not a machloket, it's a story. One who says, no, okay. But if that becomes the communal norm, we're finished. We're stum. So it's the same thing here by the Kriyat Yamsuf. Okay, that's, you can do that. Okay, so now just very briefly, let's discuss Simcha a little bit. So we alluded to a few weeks ago the notion that, hold on a second. The Jewish people sing Az Yashir. We cross the Yam Suf. And I said we put it into our Siddur 365 days a year. Unbelievable. Like Shema, like Az Yashir, 365 days a year. We say it. How can we say that? Masay Yaday Tovim Biyam Vatam Rim Shira. God got mad at the angels, right? The famous Midrashic reason we do not say Hallel on the last day. The angels started singing and God got angry at them, right? It's a beautiful Midrash. You know, the idea, can picture the scene if you can imagine. And God tells you, my creatures are drowning in the sea. So you have to think about this a lot, right? Rav Soloveitchik in his keynote on Tisha B'Av put up by J.J. Schechter at the end leaves open the question, can Nazis do tshuva? It's a fact, if we believe tshuva is universal and is never, the door is never closed, what about Nazis? Maybe the door is closed. And he doesn't answer the question. And I think that in itself is a beautiful idea. I don't know. We obviously don't know. Do you reach a point where people are just so evil, we won't allow them to do tshuva? But God gets angry. These Egyptians who tortured the Jews, they're my creations. They're also Tzelem Elohim. They weren't as bad as the Nazis. Nazis were a lot worse than the Egyptians. That's why people want to go back in Egypt. That's why they wanted to stay. They were a lot, much better. So how can you sing? So how can we sing? So the simple answer is no, we suffered. It's much different. We have the right. The collective memory of the Jewish people has the right to celebrate, so to speak, the cross. And we're not celebrating. We mention it that they drowned. It's not just that we were saved. The Yeritru Az Yashir, it's pretty clear. We mentioned the various ways they drowned. They sunk to the bottom. And that's okay. people who suffer at the hands of others can rejoice when those people suffer. So that's the why it's not really a problem. And as we discussed also a few weeks ago in our Siddur class, that the reason the Gemara says, and we just mentioned, we don't say full Hallel on the last days is has nothing to do with this idea, because we as Jews could say full Hallel. Obviously, the Midrash is disagreeing with the Gemara. The Midrash is extending that to we shouldn't say full Hallel on the last days. We should. It's not right to say Hallel. Maybe as Yashir, that's a slightly different, but to say special Hallel, I don't know. It's exactly how do you distinguish between the two. I'm not 1,000% sure, but the Midrash, maybe the Midrash would be opposed to Yashir. I'm not really sure. To saying it every day, I don't know. But the Midrash feels that we shouldn't say, even though it's the angel, we shouldn't say it on the last days. But that's not the Gemara's reason. The Gemara's reason is because the Korbanot are different. Every day is a different Korban. So for a long, long time, until yesterday, this question bothered me. What's the connection? I don't think I ever answered it when we spoke about it a few weeks ago. What's the connection between changed Korbanot and Hallel? And Hallel is Simcha. Hallel is one of the ways we express the joy of the Yontif. And that's, right, the joy on Sukkot is a little bit more. We say full Hallel, right? So but what's the connection between a Korban? And then it hit me, it's actually quite obvious that what's a Korban? A Korban is all about coming closer to God. And as Rav Soloveitchik, that's what the word means, Korban. And where are Korbanot brought? Korbanot are brought in the Beit HaMikdash. That's where we come the closest to God. So, and closeness to God engenders, is supposed to bring great happiness. And that's the Rav's famous idea he spoke about many times. Mach lichnei Hashem. On Sukkot, we rejoice before God, which halakhically refers to the temple. Right, that in the temple they had to take the lulav and etrog all 7 days because usmak them lifnei Hashem shivat yamin. And right again, that's not the shot in the pasuk. That's the trash. Lakach them lakam biyam rishon. Take on the first day and rejoice for 7 days. It's a simple shot. You take it 1 day, rejoice all 7. But the way the Gemara interprets it, 1 day everywhere else, but lifnei Hashem at 7 days. And then Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, to recreate the temple after destruction, we have to remember the positive of the temple, rejoice at the temple. We do it all 7 days. But Lifnei Hashem is Simcha. And why does the Talmud say Yom Kippur was the happiest day of the year? Because Lifnei Hashem Titara, we come before God to purify ourselves. So the height of Simcha is always before God, right? The three basic levels of Simcha are eating and drinking, learning Torah and sharing, right? Those are the three. Ein simcha l'basar v'yayin, that's what we discussed. You have to drink wine on Chol HaMoed. Physical simcha, yeah, we get joy. A good meal, that's simcha. That's part of simcha. Then there's the simcha of learning, intellectual achievement. That's the simcha, Torah is Pikud Hashem Yisrael Mesamchei Lev. The commands of God give us joy. And of course, you read a great book, you see a great insight, you make a discovery, you have tremendous joy. And a higher level of joy is to share with others. When we share, always Simcha, HaLevi, HaGer, HaYatom, BaAlmana, it's always in the context of sharing with others. And we've discussed this another time. And that's, of course, Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. Pesach is the physical element. It's very food-oriented. I don't have to tell you that. And Shavuot is very learning-oriented, intellectual-oriented. And Sukkot is all about sharing. Kol Ezrach Yisrael, we come together in one Sukkah. All the Truman and Masr, this is the time they're due. So you see, again, a progression of the holidays from the levels of Simcha. But the height of Simcha, which is mentioned on Simchat Torah, it's really on Shmini Atzeret. Vayita ach sameach, right? You should be only happy. The word ach is a strange word. It's always an exclusionary word. And the Vilna Gaon beautifully says that on Shmini Atzeret, there are no other mitzvot. There's no sukkah, there's no lulav, there's no nothing. There's just simcha. There's just the being in the presence of God, right? The Midrash, God says, it's too hard. We've been together too long. Don't go away. It's always a little depressing when Yom Tov ends. I think, I hope it should be. Some people are happy when Pesach ends. Okay. That's a whole different story. That's a problem, but what can we do? Can't solve all of the world's problems. So, but Simcha is getting close to God. And that's, of course, what a Korban is. So when the Gemara in Erechin says on Sukkot, we say full Hallel because the Korbanot are different. It means there's a new closeness to God. It's the same. It's a boring reading. It's the same. It's funny. It's funny. Even though the Torah reading on Sukkot is interesting, but the idea of a new Korban every day, it's a new experience, a new coming closer to God. So that's why you have this extra level of Simcha connected to the notion of korbanot. I'll just say one other sort of interesting idea. Has anybody ever wondered why we don't have Kabbalah Yontif? Why didn't the people, I mean, Kabbalah Shabbos, listen, it's not so, but Shabbos is 400 years old, 450 years old, like in the 16th century in Sfat. It's like not, the Rambam didn't know of Kabbalah Shabbos, the Gemara, they're like, you know, Rabbi Akiva didn't say Kabbalah Shabbos, you know. Why didn't they do Kabbalah Shabbos? And by the way, it wasn't until the 19th century that it got accepted in all Ashkenazic communities. My understanding is the German community didn't say it. It's only in the 19th century they finally accepted Kabbalah Shabbos, that it's universally said. Why is there no Kabbalah Yontif? Well, what do we have against Yontif? Everybody's so quiet. I don't know if I scared you. So, Rav Soloveitchik has a very beautiful, very simple, if you think about it. What's the difference between Shabbos and Yontif? What do we do on Yontif? On Yontif, we go to the Beit HaMikdash. That's why there's a din of Simcha. The Shalosh Regalim come up to the Beit HaMikdash. The whole notion of Simcha emanates from being in the presence of God. Yeah, the physical aspect, the spiritual aspect, whatever, but Simcha is the presence of God. That's why on Yontif, there's a mitzvah of Aliyah LeRegel, not on Shabbat. No. So on Shabbat, on Yontif, we are guests in God's house. On Shabbat, we welcome the queen. God comes to us. God comes to our house. No. When somebody comes to your house, you put out the red carpet. When you're a guest in somebody's house, you can't welcome them. Can't welcome God. You're in God's house. So on Yontif, there's no Kabbalah Yontif. It doesn't make sense. But it's so beautiful. We never think like this. But right, if we think of Yontif, that we're coming to God's house, of course, we live in Chutz Laretz, most of us, and live in Chutz Laretz. And even those who live in Israel, it's not quite the same, although it is different. But still, it's a beautiful idea that Yontif, we're much more in the presence of God. We're going up to the Beit HaMikdash. And therefore, we obviously can't welcome God to the Beit HaMikdash, but it's a different idea. Okay, that's, I just want to point out another thing. So that's the Lane Tomorrow, the eighth day, or whatever, for those who have the eighth day. We read Kol HaBechor. It's the shortest Torah reading of the year, except for Purim, 15 verses, I think it is. The Shalosh Regalim in Parshat Re'eh, which again, I was Menachem Leitag who first pointed out to me, but it gets obvious. This laning is never done in the land of Israel. It's only done in Chutz Laretz. The laning talks about the mitzvah to go to Israel on the Shalosh Regalim. That's the basic theme of the laning. I mean, that's not the only theme, right? We read it on the last day of Pesach in Israel, they were doing Achrimot. We read on the second day of Shavuot, and we read on Shmini Atzeret because, you know, we want to do Vizor HaBracha on Simchas Torah. But in Israel, they do Vizor HaBracha on Shmini Atzeret Simchas Torah. So this laning is never done in Eretz Yisrael. It's only done in Chutz Laretz. So I just want to point out something. That's not where I want to go here. Okay, so just let me point out something here very quickly. Let me share my screen again. So you'll notice something interesting by all three of the holidays here. Where are we? Deuteronomy 16. Shemor Chodesh Aviv. So we start Kol HaBechor Ki Tivaleid, right? Yeah, and the law of firstborn, you have to give to the Kohen, right? Come in. Moom, okay, fine. And then we Shamor Chodesh Aviv. This is why we have to have Pesach in the spring. You'll notice none of the holidays. The first thing you'll notice is Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are missing. First Pesach here, Shiva Shavuot Yisbar Lecha, Yisbar Lach, and then Chag HaSukkot Taseh Lecha Shivat Yamim, V'Samachta B'Chagecha, Ata Levi, right again, sharing with others, Shivat Yamim, B'Makom HaShei Yivchar Hashem, you've got to come up to Jerusalem, except Shalosh Pamim, Yerko Zerchorcha, right? This is the major theme. What happened to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? Why Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur not mentioned here in this recounting of the holidays? In Emor, they're mentioned. In Pinchas, they're mentioned. Why are they not mentioned in Re'eh?
They're not regels, and the Bechor is the one who has to come, who has to be, you know, to come up to the Beit HaMikdash.
Everybody has to come to the Beit
HaMikdash. I mean, the Zachor.
Right. So why do we only mention the Shalosh Regalim, I guess, you are correct. Why do we have to limit to the Shalosh Regalim? Why doesn't Torah talk about all the holidays? So you want to, maybe there's no deen of Simcha and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. There's no deen of Aliyah. You are correct. But but why does Torah present it this way? So Shinshon Rafael Hirsch explains, because it's part of the whole theme of Sefer Dvarim. Sefer Dvarim is preparing the Jewish people for entry to the land of Israel. Everything in Sefer Dvarim relates to the land of Israel. That's why all the national mitzvot to set the next parsha, Shoftim Vishotrim, setting up a Sanhedrin, setting up court system. Doesn't apply, you live in Canada, a Jewish court system. It applies in Israel. The mitzvot, even staka, is seen as a nationalistic mitzvah. It's mentioned in Parshat Re'eh earlier. So all the mitzvot in Re'eh are related to Israel. That's what you have to think about that. Some of the mitzvot, marriage, what's marriage doing there? Marriage and divorce doesn't seem to connect Israel. You always have to ask yourself, but that's the theme. So therefore, we only mention the Shalosh Regalim. But you notice there are no dates for any of the holidays. Because it's agriculture, there are only seasons. Shamor Chodesh Aviv, right? The spring festival, Vasita Pesach. Kiba Chodesh Aviv, we left Egypt in the month, could be any day in the month, right? Then we talk about, it says eat matzah for 7 days. That is, they went to celebrate it. Shiva Shavuot, when is Shavuot? With a sickle, is first put in the standing grain. No, that can change on the season. You know, the rainy season's early, it's late this year. It's gonna change. And when is Sukkot? Sukkot is Ba'aspacha Migrancha Migvecha. It's when you gather in the leftover of the grains and the right. But there are no dates for these holidays. It's just fascinating that reinforces the agricultural theme of these festivals, which we began with the Netziv, that they're purely agriculture. Of course, in other places, the Torah gives a specific date to the holidays. But it's, you know, we have to look at the Torah each part independently, and then we have to look at the whole Torah as a complete book. So when you're reading Sefer Dvarim as a book about the land of Israel, it's not important the days of the festival. What's important is we recognize that the agricultural gifts of God, and that's sort of what the Netziv was saying. That's all about thanking God for our agricultural blessings. Who cares? Do it in the beginning, the spring and the summer and the fall. What difference does it make? What time it is. Okay, later on, there's no, timing is very important. It's got to be Balayla Hazeb, Shashesh Matzer, Marer, Munachim Lefanecha. But I thought that was an interesting idea. Okay, I just want to spend 2 minutes or a minute and a half just to mention the Minhag of Yisker, which, of course, many people associate Yisker. Ruth, you have a question or comment?
A quick question. So, but since the Yom Acharon, this year is on Shabbat. So the Maimachzer has the Torah reading starts with Aser to Aser.
Oh, you are correct. You are correct.
So,
yes.
Do I comment on that?
The simple reason, I didn't think about that when I was doing, so thank you for pointing that out. The simple reason is you need seven aliyot, and you're not going to get seven aliyot in Kol HaBechor. That's a simple reason off the top of my head. But we always do that on Shemini Atzeret, by the way. Shemini Atzeret, we always begin Atzeret Atzeret, because again, I said Sukkot is about sharing. Atzeret Atzeret, giving the Masrot, that's the season. So it's always read on Shemini Atzeret.
Unless you're a Yeki.
Oh, I'm not a Yeki. I did Yeki. Not know.
In Frankfurt, in Frankfurt, they started Kol HaBechor on Shmini Atzeret. Yeah.
Okay. I did not know that. Thank you for that. Okay, good. You see, I'm minhagim, different minhagim. Because I told you already, Torah relating, it's fluid a little bit. But the minhag that I'm aware of and printed in all the secret I've seen is that you always do Atzeret Atzeret on Shmini Atzeret because of that. But on Shavuot and on Sukkot on Shavuot, and Pesach only you don't do it if it's on Shabbat. You only do it if it's on Shabbat. Otherwise, you do Kol HaBechor. But just very quickly talk about Yisker, which is a very difficult minhag. How in the world are we allowed to say Yisker on Yontif? Yisker is supposed to be sad. You're not allowed to do sad things. It breaks Avelus. That's probably the basis. You know, some people, there's always a debate. You know, when a parent passes away, people always don't know the first year. They say Yisker the first year or not. So it depends. Different rabbis will tell you different things. I think that's the issue. The issue is the assumption the first year is a year of mourning. After a year, the Gemara says, you know, we don't really mourn in the same way. We can celebrate a life, so to speak. They do that, which is fine. So perhaps that's so. But the first year, that's too hard. So maybe you shouldn't say Yisker the first year. There is that that custom. I don't know what people hear and their customs and communities for that one. But even if we say it's a celebration of life and that, it's still a little bit strange. This celebration of life is a very modern term. I don't think in Chazal you have that idea, really. You know, yes, we remember. It's true. You stop mourning after a year, but it's not like, okay, we're going to piyutim. You know, you're not supposed to. We know in Nisan you can't have hesbedim. So depending on the community, you know, usually the rabbi gets up and he says, you know, we're not allowed to give hesbedim. It's Nisan. So I'll just say a few words about the person who passed away. Okay. I think that's the proper approach in today's world. It did not have hespedim. It's a very strange. They're not real hespedim. The hesped of the Gemara, people used to cry after the hesped. The Gemara says you can't do a hesped 30 days before any yontif. Forget Pesach. Can't do 30 days from before Shavuot Pesach because people would get so upset about the hesped that they couldn't enjoy the yontif 30 days later. Are you kidding? Anybody? I mean, that's not the normal course of events today. I don't know. Pinim are different. So yeah, you can, there are different types of hesbedim, but you go sometimes funerals in Nisan or, you know, they'll just say Tehillim or whatever, fine. Yeah, each to their own. But, so it's a little bit hard. You can't do hesbedim. So you're going to say Yisker on Yontif? It's one thing. On Nisan, okay. On Yontif, say Yisker. It's a very difficult Minag. It's much later Minag. The real Minag is, of course, on Yom Kippur. And that's the idea because, one idea is that Rav Soloveitchik raises the notion of how the dead are also judged. Don't think you're finished when the 120, because all the impact of your life continues. And then maybe, you know, things you did, like Rav Meir Shapiro, 500,000 people learning Daf Yomi every day. You know, this food Meir Shapiro gets everything. I don't know, it's a very hard con. You have to think about that concept of what does that mean? Because often you don't control from the grave what happened. But anyway, that's one idea. But also, it reminds us, Yisker is for us, that Yom HaMita, to do tshuva. The Gemara says the most, when you want to sin, you say Kriyat Shema. We don't have time to talk about that now. Say Kriyat Shema. If that doesn't work, go to the base medrash. And if that doesn't work, think about the day of death. So obviously, Yom Kippur, Yisker is very appropriate. But what the Shalosh Regalim, Yimei Simcha. So very briefly, because I see it's late already, the idea is that really the Shalosh Regalim, a secondary motif, is the Yimei Hadin. The second Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, I won't share the screen now, but the second Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah says, "Ba'arba prakim olam nidon." 4 times a year, the world is judged. But Pesach alatua, the grain is judged on Pesach, on Shavuot peirat ha'ilan, the fruit of the tree, and Pesukot al ha'mayim. U'bechag nidonim al ha'mayim. So they're miniature Yom Kippur. Rosh Hashanah, kol ba'olam avrim lepanach. Kibnei Marom. On Rosh Hashanah, everybody, Jew and non-Jew, passes before him like Kibnei Marom, whatever, like sheep, one by one, whatever the translation of that term is. And that's, of course, why the Midrash says, on Pesach, we bring the Korban HaOmer. That's from the with grain, he's judging. On Pesach, we bring Shavuot. So I would say it's Bikurim, the fruits of Bikurim. But the Midrash says it's Shtei HaLechem, the wheat. Because in the Torah, wheat is a fruit. Eretz Chita V'Sora, the 7 species of the fruit, Israel is wheat. So we bring the wheat, the Shtei HaLechem, on Shavuot, because God is judging us on Peirot Ilan, and of course on Sukkot, we do Nisuach HaMayim. So because they're days of judgment, so really the point of Yisker is to remind us of this, to do tshuva. Yontif is also a time for tshuva. If this is correct, which I think it is, and this is why I'm going to say something that's going to get me into a lot of trouble, so everybody can ignore what I say, but I'll say it anyways. So it's after 10 o'clock, so this is extra time. I say it doesn't make any sense for people who thank God don't have to say Yisker to walk out of shul, because they also have to do tshuva. You know, the minhag, you go to shul, they announce, they clap on the table, everybody walks out. If you're in a young shul, the 3/4 of the shul walks out. I don't know. There's something, first of all, lack of the, I don't know. I maybe because my father, Alav Shalom, always used to announce that the Yisker people should stay. Everybody should stay. And that's how I grew up. I didn't go out for Yisker. And now, unfortunately, I have to say Yisker. But I don't know. There's something here. Everybody walks out. I think the Ayin Hara is sort of worse. When people, if they say it's an Ayin Hara, they're there. I don't know. I think it's worse. You sort of look at these people. You're sort of, they can walk out of the big knuckers here. So I don't know. I know that's not the accepted practice at all. But if you understand what the minhag of Yisker is, I think, to me, that makes a lot of sense. Nothing will happen. We're not a superstitious people. We're not supposed to be a superstitious people, which I think of a lot of that is that people don't want to be there you know, somehow. But anyway, so that's it. But Yontif is a happy time. Yes. And we should remember our parents. We have to say Yisker for in a positive sense. And, you know, I know we want to use the term celebration of life, but it's the positive action. It's not the mourning aspect, God forbid. It's the sort of aspect of. So just let's do a very quick review. We start down how the Netziv says, unbelievable in a Shemitah year. Of course, this is a Shemitah year, which is why I mention it, that there originally was not, apparently, he suggests, there may not have been Chag HaKatzir and Chag HaSif, better known as Shavuot and Sukkot. Pesach there would be, because Pesach not agriculture, Yetziat Mitzrayim, forming of our nation. And only after Chet HaEgel did we have to reestablish these national holidays that are normal national holidays into a holiday of Amun and Hashem. We have to come to the Beit HaMikdash. We've changed the nature of the holiday, and therefore we celebrate it even in a Shemitah year. I just think that's an unbelievable idea. And we discussed Kriyat Yamsuf is not mentioned a specific date. Of course, the Midrash links it to the seventh day, but we're allowed to sing. The angels maybe can't sing, but we can sing. We're the ones who suffered, the Gemara, and then, of course, the debate, who went in first? Is it really a debate? Was it Binyamin, or is it in advance? Everybody said, we're going to go, and when they got there, they didn't want to go, and just like Mitat Stom, I don't want to help, no. But if everybody has that attitude, we're finished as a society, and we talked about the mitzvah of Simcha a little bit. The reason the Gemara says to say, full hall, the korbanot, our divine korbanot is coming close to God, coming to the Beit HaMikdash. That's the place of Simcha. Usmach dem lifnei Hashem. That's the height of Simcha. There's physical Simcha, eating a nice meal. That's also part of Simcha. It's also a mitzvah. Basar Yain, also learning Torah, the intellectual, and then sharing with others. Share with the widow, the poor, the orphan. And that's all the Shalosh Regalim. We go visit God, therefore there's no Kabbalat Yontif because we're visiting God, as like on Shabbat where God is visiting us. And we pointed out Re'eh is totally agriculture. We don't even have dates for the holidays, and we ended up talking a little bit about Yisker a little bit. Okay, I want to wish everybody a wonderful Yontif. Very cool. No quite both. But anyways, thank you very much. By the Monday, we're starting our series. We have to send out an email, but unfortunately, you know, Joel Hecker, Professor Hecker, sent an email. He has COVID. He's been under the weather for weeks, and he's just not up to giving his series. I know it's best that everybody's busy. We'll send an email, but 1 p.m. 1 p.m. Simi Peters will be starting Mickey Left Root at 1 p.m. And Mark Shapiro will be back on 8:30 p.m. This Tuesday, there are no classes. Next Tuesday, we'll have two. But on Wednesday, Marty Lakshin is back after a long hiatus. I'm Parsha Nuit at 11 a.m. And at 1 p.m., Rabbi Moshe Shulman, who is now Rabbi of Young Israel in St. Louis, will be given Midrashic Methodology. I think that's what we call it, a six-week series on Midrash. That's, I know he's very into, very much loves Tanakh, teacher of Tanakh, served of course for 10 years as a rabbi in Toronto. Okay, and then our regular shiurim during the week, but watch it for the emails. I don't know how many people watch emails on Pesach, but I want to wish everybody a Chag Sameach, enjoy physical, spiritual, intellectual sharing, and feel the presence of God. That's not always easy to do, but that's the goal that we should now have. Yeah, so I want to show everybody Chag Sameach. And of course, next week, please God, my Siddur Shir will begin, as I mentioned, because of my teaching schedule, 9:35. I know that's a weird time, but I teach till 9:30. So I need 5 minutes. I'll be giving the class at chat, actually, because I'm teaching after. But 9:35, please God. Next Friday, we'll pick up at Rabbi Yishmael Omer, Mishlosh Asrei Midot. Had to run the dresh of him. Okay, everybody. Wonderful. Zev, you have a great. Bye. You can leave. Stay. Any questions? Happy to answer. Thank you, everybody.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom. Enjoy Yontif. I know it's almost Yontif in Israel.
Yeah.
Okay. Enjoy. Thank you very much. Okay. Be well. Shabbat shalom. Chag Sameach. Shabbat shalom. This week. Chag Sameach. Okay. Yes. Zev, what did you want to ask?
I was just waving goodbye.
Oh, you were waving goodbye. Okay, thank you very much. Okay.
You should remind everyone you're in Erev Tashlichim.
Oh, yes. Thank you for reminding me. I don't recognize. That's good. That's why I need students to remind me of all these things. Right. I'm not my sister-in-law. So I'm not cooking, and we're not cooking anything where we are. Just so. But I'm sure my sister-in-law knows to make an Erev Tevshilin. So, OK. Yes. But Erev Tevshilin. Yeah. That's
it.
OK. Good job, everybody.